Credo. It is fair to ask of everyone a reason for the faith within, though it be but to repeat my twice-told tale, nay, the tale already told 100 times, yet ask, and I will answer. Do you believe in God? I believe more in him than do most Christians, for I have no faith in any other thing or being. He sustains my individuality. Nay, more, he is my individuality and my life. Because he lives, I live. He heals all my ills, destroys my iniquities, deprives death of its sting, and robs the grave of its victory. To me, God is all. He is best understood as supreme being, as infinite and conscious life, as the affectionate father and mother of all he creates. But this divine parent no more enters into his creation than the human father enters into his child. His creation is not the ego, but the reflection of the ego. The ego is God himself, the infinite soul. I believe that of which I am conscious through the understanding, however faintly able to demonstrate truth and love. Do you believe in man? I believe in the individual man, for I understand that man is as definite and eternal as God, and that man is coexistent with God, as being the eternally divine idea. This is demonstrable by the simple appeal to human consciousness. But I believe less in the sinner, wrongly named man. The more I understand true humanhood, the more I see it to be sinless, as ignorant of sin as is the perfect maker. To me, the reality and substance of being are good and nothing else. Through the eternal reality of existence, I reach, in thought, a glorified consciousness of the only living God and the genuine man. So long as I hold evil in consciousness, I cannot be wholly good. You cannot simultaneously serve the mammon of materiality and the God of spirituality. There are not two realities of being, two opposite states of existence. One should appear real to us and the other unreal, or we lose the science of being. Standing in no basic truth, we make the worse appear the better reason, and the unreal masquerades as the real in our thought. Evil is without principle. Being destitute of principle, it is devoid of science. Hence, it is undemonstrable, without proof. This gives me a clearer right to call evil a negation than to affirm it to be something which God sees and knows, but which he straightway commands mortals to shun or relinquish, lest it destroy them. This notion of the destructibility of mind implies the possibility of its defilement. But how can infinite mind be defiled? Do you believe in matter? I believe in matter only as I believe in evil, that it is something to be denied and destroyed to human consciousness and is unknown to the divine. We should watch and pray that we enter not into the temptation of pantheistic belief in matter as sensible mind. We should subjugate it as Jesus did by a dominant understanding of spirit. At best, matter is only a phenomenon of mortal mind, of which evil is the highest degree. But really, there is no such thing as mortal mind, though we are compelled to use the phrase in the endeavor to express the underlying thought. In reality, there are no material states or stages of consciousness, and matter has neither mind nor sensation. Like evil, it is destitute of mind, for mind is God. The less consciousness of evil or matter mortals have, the easier it is for them to evade sin, sickness, and death, which are but states of false belief, and awake from the troubled dream a consciousness which is without mind or maker. Matter and evil cannot be conscious, and consciousness should not be evil. Adopt this rule of science, and you will discover the material origin, growth, maturity, and death of sinners, as the history of man disappears and the everlasting facts of being appear, wherein man is the reflection of immutable good. Reasoning from false premises, that life is material, that immortal soul is sinful, and hence that sin is eternal, the reality of being is neither seen, felt, heard, nor understood. Human philosophy and human reason can never make one hair white or black, except in belief, whereas the demonstration of God, as in Christian Science, is gained through Christ as perfect manhood. In pantheism, the world is bereft of its God, whose place is ill supplied by the pretentious usurpation by matter of the heavenly sovereignty. What say you of woman? Man is the generic term for all humanity. Woman is the highest species of man, and this word is the generic term for all women. But not one of all these individualities is an Eve or an Adam. They have none of them lost their harmonious state in the economy of God's wisdom and government. The ego is divine consciousness, eternally radiating throughout all space in the idea of God, good, and not of his opposite, evil. The ego is revealed as Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. But the full truth is found only in divine science, where we see God as life, truth, and love. In the scientific relation of man to God, man is reflected not as human soul, but as the divine ideal, whose soul is not in body, but is God, the divine principle of man. Hence, soul is sinless and immortal, in contradistinction to the supposition that there can be sinful souls or immortal sinners. This science of God and man is the Holy Ghost, which reveals and sustains the unbroken and eternal harmony of both God and the universe. It is the kingdom of heaven, the ever-present reign of harmony already with us. Hence the need that human consciousness should become divine in the coincidence of God and man, in contradistinction to the false consciousness of both good and evil, God and devil, of man separated from his maker. This is the precious redemption of soul as mortal sense through Christ's immortal sense of truth, which presents truth's spiritual idea, man and woman. What say you of evil? God is not the so-called ego of evil, for evil as a supposition is the father of itself, of the material world, the flesh, and the devil. From this falsehood arise the self-destroying elements of this world, its unkind forces, its tempests, lightnings, earthquakes, poisons, rabid beasts, fatal reptiles, and mortals. Why are earth and mortals so elaborate in beauty, color, and form, if God has no part in them? By the law of opposites, the most beautiful blossom is often poisonous, and the most beautiful mansion is sometimes the home of vice. The senses, not God, soul, form the condition of beautiful evil, and the supposed modes of self-conscious matter, which make a beautiful lie. Now, a lie takes its pattern from truth by reversing truth. So evil and all its forms are inverted good. God never made them, but the lie must say he made them, or it would not be evil. Being a lie, it would be truthful to call itself a lie. And by calling the knowledge of evil good and greatly to be desired, it constitutes the lie an evil. The reality and individuality of man are good and God-made, and they are here to be seen and demonstrated. It is only the evil belief that renders them obscure. Matter and evil are anti-Christian, the antipodes of science. To say that mind is material, or that evil is mind, is a misapprehension of being, a mistake which will die of its own delusion. For being self-contradictory, it is also self-destructive. The harmony of man's being is not built on such false foundations, which are no more logical, philosophical, or scientific than would be the assertion that the rule of addition is the rule of subtraction, and that sums done under both rules would have one quotient. Man's individuality is not a mortal mind or sinner, or else he has lost his true individuality as a perfect child of God. Man's father is not a mortal mind and a sinner, or else the immortal and unerring mind, God, is not his father. But God is man's origin and loving father. Hence that saying of Jesus, "Call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your Father, which is in heaven." The bright gold of truth is dimmed by the doctrine of mind in matter. To say there is a false claim called sickness is to admit all there is of sickness, for it is nothing but a false claim. To be healed, one must lose sight of a false claim. If the claim be present to the thought, then disease becomes as tangible as any reality. To regard sickness as a false claim is to abate the fear of it. But this does not destroy the so-called fact of the claim. In order to be whole, we must be insensible to every claim of error. As with sickness, so is it with sin. To admit that sin has any claim whatever, just or unjust, is to admit a dangerous fact. Hence the fact must be denied. For if sin's claim be allowed in any degree, then sin destroys the at-one-ment or oneness with God, a unity which sin recognizes as its most potent and deadly enemy. If God knows sin, even as a false claimant, then acquaintance with that claimant becomes legitimate to mortals, and this knowledge would not be forbidden. But God forbade man to know evil at the very beginning, when Satan held it up before man as something desirable and a distinct addition to human wisdom, because the knowledge of evil would make man a god, a representation that God both knew and admitted the dignity of evil. Which is right? God, who condemned the knowledge of sin and disowned its acquaintance, or the serpent, who pushed that claim with the glittering audacity of diabolical and sinuous logic?